SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very happy Saratoga Friday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. It is, as they used to say on the commercials. In fact, if Casey were to reach back to one of his old computers that we go through it on a regular basis, I'm sure somewhere in his garage there are the commercials with Tom Durkin's voice, the season you wait for all year. And that is very much the case when you live and work and travel through this area. It is just a special atmosphere that literally on Labor Day, at 6:30 on Labor Day, the first thing people are thinking about is the Friday in July when Saratoga will start again. It's uniqueness, the town, everything about it. As Red Smith famously wrote, "How do you get to Saratoga? Drive 2.5 hours north and back 100 years. That really encapsulates what Saratoga was. Because as we've had some conversation these last few weeks, the town hasn't changed, and it's changed tremendously. And as odd as that sounds, it's fair because it really, the influx of affluence, really a big part of it. There's no other description. But you know, the way I've described going back many years, the first awareness, I think I would say in the 90s when I met a couple of couples from Rochester, retired Xerox executives. And they said they had retired to Saratoga. Retired to Saratoga. Really? And I think from that point, and I was, at that point, I was probably living in Montreal. I must have been. I had a sense that things were happening here that were going to morph the community. And as we've discussed before, there was a period, certainly when I first started coming in the 70s, where the town was dog-eared and a little threadbare. And the racetrack and Skidmore, you know, those were the two, you know, seasonal entities that, you know, that provided a certain, you know, certain continuity and a certain draw. And whatever the individual spark was, Saratoga started to, you know, to really enjoy a rebuilding period, a renewal. That continues, and it is quite amazing. I moved to the area in 99. I had always, for many, many, many years, I mean, going back to when I would come here as a college student, as a Colgate student, to chase Skidmore girls. That was the start of my literal flirtation with Saratoga, and then, you know, coming here you know, as many weekends as possible, and then being, you know, within a very close drive when I moved to Montreal in 1990-91. And, you know, and now I've lived here, lived in Greenwich. I've lived here since 1999. And the proximity to Saratoga and some confluence of events very much changed my own, you know, the course of my own life. And so Saratoga, as significant and as impactful for myself and for so many people, and whether they come here for the rest of their lives, or like an Andy Serling, grew up here. Those that come for one afternoon a summer, or spend a week, or spend 7 weeks. Whatever your relationship is with the racetrack and with the area, I wrote this morning, you know, how welcoming it is and what it means to the community, what it means to the racing industry, the home of the Hall of Fame, and, you know, later this summer, you know, the, you know, one of the longest running sales of its kind, the Yearling Sale at Fasig Tipton, and so much of what goes on in the industry has really, you know, has its roots and has you know, a certain ongoing tie to Saratoga, and it's what has sustained it after some uncertainty in the 60s into what it is today. And the facility itself, the New York Racing Association, continues to, you know, make it as comfortable for people as possible. It was one thing when they raced here 24 days. It's a little different story now. And, you know, the demands of the entertainment landscape and marketplace, the introduction of several new areas and the new construction that is getting started, just a unique and wonderful venue now and forever. And we kick it off at 1 o'clock today. Looking forward to conversations and handicapping and every angle that we can look at the season. And we'll spend certain days, didn't think today was, didn't have to be there today. So we'll save some visits and broadcast opportunities for down the road. And looking forward to running some horses with our group, and obviously playing on a daily basis. We'll wish everybody the best of luck. Safe trips to all the horses. That's first and foremost. And hope everybody on their way, and even those that will only visit through the magic of simulcast, we're glad that you're here and that you're coming and that you're going to take part in any way, shape, or form. We're going to talk to Nick Tamaro first this morning after the first break. Looking forward to getting Nick's early season takes. As always, look at first couple of cards and just a little bit ahead to Sunday. It's hard not to be excited about Coaching Club American Oaks. They drew yesterday, and the field of five, Midnight Bizou and Monomoy Girl, well, that was going to be great. Then Tom Amos shows up with Chocolate Martini, the Fairground Oaks upsetter, went out to Santa Anita, was third in the Summertime Oaks as well. And was, people may forget, she got the last significant check in the Kentucky Oaks. If you forgot that, fifth. Eskimo Kisses shows up, fourth in the Kentucky Oaks, second in the Ashland, second in the Fairground Oaks. McPeak, as he told you last week, that he was coming with Eskimo Kisses. And Geo Game out of the third place finish in the Acorn. So this is what you call a pretty special quintet. This is unbelievable, really. And you look at this, I should add up everything that went on in here between Monomoy Girl and Midnight Bizou. The headlining. There is not a horse that doesn't have at least a grade one placing on their resume. Even Eskimo Kisses and Geo Game, without graded stake wins, but grade one placed. Outstanding. And Coaching Club American Oaks, great long history, of course. And I should mention, we are under a bit of a weather watch starting on Sunday. There's a seems like an inevitability right now that we're going to get some rain potentially Sunday morning. And so, and then, you know, for a few days there forward. So that's the one sort of Damocles that is kind of present into opening weekend. But the first four cards, including Monday, Overflow Field in the Caress, the Turf Sprint, 10% of the meat already chiseled into the firmament. Getting ready to go. Let's also take a couple and look at yesterday, because Del Mar, and we'll talk plenty about Del Mar, that has got a nice weekend ahead as well. We'll talk to Steve Anderson at the top of hour two. We'll talk to Hammer in hour three. And he was on hand yesterday. There is a carryover today at Del Mar already. And the late action was pretty formful, but enough of a price surprise, even on, you know, the race, the eight race card. You look at the $23 to 1 shot surrender now from Peter Miller. It's hard to believe that Peter Miller and Rockingham Ranch are sending out 23 to 1 shots, but in fact, surrender now. And don't, you know, for those of you who got off to a bad start at Del Mar, don't surrender yet. Hang in. But surrender now more or less set the tone, the $49 winner. That made it, you know, pretty apparent that there was going to be, you know, potential. There had actually been a $19 winner even in the second, but all that did was, you know, kind of kick things up for the early pick five, because you had Robin's Love, who was even money, and then our Tiger Boy 9 to 1 that closed out the pick five, and that pretty much, you know, made it apparent there would be a carryover. That pick five yesterday that got the first part of the card, races 1 through 5, 13,300, and 650,000 bet into it. The pick four paid 3,073. So some of the first big balloons that produced at Del Mar, and you go into this Friday card, day three at Old Del Mar, and we've got a pick six carryover today of 56,000. There's also they got the jackpot as well that keeps rolling, and that pulls up to 31,000 already in just 2 days of racing. So Del Mar and a good Friday card featuring the Oceanitas. We'll get lots of news and views from Steve Anderson. And Steve, of course, tromping the backstretch. We'll head to the break. We'll come back with Nick Tamaro. We'll also talk to Sean Clancy. The Saratoga Special started their publishing season, and what a job. Sean and his brother Joe and Mike Law, and then the staff that they assemble every summer. Amazing. Do an amazing job. And it It's invaluable. You can read it online. You don't have to. You don't have to pick it up at a at one of the little. I can't even call it a lockbox because there's no lock because they're free. And when Johnny D, for instance, when Johnny says it's worth twice the price, well, same thing applies here. Saratoga Special. The writing is wonderful. The timeliness, the way they bang out a full newspaper on a daily basis. It's really 6 days a week. Just incredible. So we'll talk to Sean and kick off the season with him. And, of course, next week with Sean when the steeplechase season gets underway as well. James Scully will join us. We didn't get to James last week. We'll get his weekend opinions and his philosophy and approach to the summer stands. Ed DeRosa as well. We'll get Ed's ideas. I told you, Hammer. We'll get to Mike Welch. It's a busy morning with Turf Works today. So Mike Welch at the end of the show, and of course, the DRF Clocker Report. First two editions, obviously last night, you were going to get the today's card was up, but also Saturday. Mike got the Saturday produced early too. So that gave you a little bit of a head start. And Donald Harris and Dave Grenick contributing as well to the Saratoga copy. Toby Terrell handling the West Coast Clocking Report. You can buy for the whole meet. You can buy for a week. You can buy for a day, whatever. And especially for those maiden races, it's vital. Tried to get John Nichols. John tied up this morning, so we'll do it with him next week because I wanted him to provide. Next week, early next week, probably Tuesday, we'll get John. I want him to preview the Kentucky outfits because if you've handicapped the first two cards already, and even into Sunday and Monday, you'll note how significant a presence the Kentucky outfits have. And there's been some lean years, let's be honest. There's been some struggles. But we might get a read right away today, including in the Schuylerville, where the Cassies, Mark and Norm, Amos and Ben Colebrook are all present. Asmussen, of course, as well. So Dale Romans will start to show up, of course, and everybody else that's in from the Commonwealth. We hope that the Commonwealth is spread around Del Mar and Saratoga these next 7 weeks. Back after this to kick it off, Saratoga with Nick Tamaro.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Cole Ranch has the facility and the expert personnel to get your yearlings started correctly right here in California. Hi, this is Steve Cole. We have a variety of round pens, a huge outdoor arena, as well as a meticulously maintained 5/8 mile training track with rails and a 4-horse starting gate. Your horse will be given the utmost in care and attention. We employ only patience and kindness and scrupulously avoid cowboy training methods that rely on fear and deprivation. We also have numerous irrigated turnouts when your horse needs a break from the rigors of training. So give me a call at 805-990-3669 or visit our website. At Cole Ranch, we don't break racehorses. We build racehorses.
This is the house that Funk built. Groove Armada style.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back and rolling into the season. Nick Tamaro will join us momentarily, putting him on a landline. Because I know that you want to hear every distinct selection and analysis that that Nick offers. And looking forward to getting him here. He's going to go to Del Mar first, though. He's hitting Del Mar, and then he'll be here later in the meet. And, of course, the contest, he always shows up and all of his cohorts, all the contest cronies, they'll all be here. Looking forward to seeing everybody and some fun tweeting going on as people descend on Saratoga this morning, coming in either for the day, for the weekend. Hope your trip is well underway and looking forward to seeing everybody. Going to start things off with Nick Tamaro. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. We've got a beautiful day
Merry
to start
Christmas.
Things off. That's right. That's right. Merry Christmas. It's Christmas in July.
That's right.
Seen a few of those. Well, we start off, and a lot of the regular themes, Nick, of this unique meet are really on display these first 3 days. I haven't looked at Monday, but between now and the coaching club, you really get a snapshot of this era of Saratoga. I know people, the minute the overnight dropped on Tuesday for today's card, I heard the, oh, this is not the Saratoga. Stop with that. It drives me nuts.
Well, you know, and there's this overwhelming haste in the world right now to compare everything. You know, so-and-so is the greatest ever, and so-and-so is the next Jordan, and this and that. And why can't people just be the first of what they are? You know, why can't we just acknowledge that times change, things evolve? You know, the so-called wonder years of racetracks and racing, yeah, you know, we don't see a normal Gulfstream card on Saturdays now that we did 25 years ago, and we probably don't see the same Saratoga, but that doesn't mean that it lacks quality, doesn't mean that it's not extremely bettable. And, you know, if anything, I would say that I would make the argument, and perhaps I would be proven wrong, but I think that things now are situated more for the better than they've ever been before. And you and I mean that by field size and opportunities for horizontal wagers and those kind of things. So, you know, while it might not be exactly what you want from a historical perspective, that's why history is the past, right? Let's deal with the present, and what we do have to deal with is what's going to be a lot of good racing. And I think that field size in general is going to improve as the meet goes on. I think in the second week we'll see quite a bounce, given that the the first week kind of came up on everybody with the condition book and everything else. So I think things are going to be outstanding. I think it'll be a very good meet, and undoubtedly, without question, through these first 3 days, 4 days, including Monday, with hopefully a little help from the weather, we've got some really good stakes races.
Very much, and we'll talk about the coaching club in a minute. Let's obviously, with people on their way, we're not going to spend too much time on the Friday card. We're going to look more towards Saturday and give everybody a chance to, you know, to be ready on that front. And before we get to Saturday, let's at least set the tone and get a feel for, at the very least, the two stakes, because the Schuylerville, I thought that the fact that we've got 6 of the 10 horses coming in from points on the compass, it tells you, you know, that you have to be kind of open to anything, meaning Cal Lynch coming in with a horse that's going to be a price in Congrats Gal, and it could be anything. I mean, you look at these 10 I wrote this morning, Nick, no combination in the Try and Super will be a shock.
No, not at all. And yeah, we're definitely seeing how two-year-old racing has expanded and the horizon has been broadened a little bit in terms of where horses come from. Cal Lynch obviously won the Tremont with our Brain Trust, so he's a trainer that can certainly ship one in and have him ready. I thought Nona Madeline's debut at Monmouth was sensational. It was expected given her price that day, but she ran extremely well, didn't get out of the gate that well, and usually, other than in circumstances maybe where they're facing vastly inferior foes, usually a slow break for a Todd Pletcher two-year-old first-time starter is for any first-time starter, for that matter, at the two-year-old ranks, is a death sentence. And she overcame it very easily, won the race going away, should have no issue whatsoever with a little bit more ground. And more often than not, the Schuylerville is won by a horse that comes from off the pace. And that's generally because these two-year-olds are trained to be fast out of the gate. So many of them end up showing speed that you end up with some type of meltdown, and you'll get a result like Let Me Go or any variety of them over the years that have come from pretty deep in the pack. So I think Nona Madeline's ability to take back and make one run will really put her over, has everybody else, I think, looking at her as the horse to beat, and any improvement whatsoever, I think, will really make her that much tougher. Now, that being said, the Cassies in some are packing quite a wallop between the horses that they're bringing in, and Catherine the Great, I think, is chief among them, given that huge win last time at Gulfstream. Now, if you're talking about competition and wondering what Madeline may have beaten at Monmouth, and I think you definitely have to be skeptical of what Catherine the Great faced down in Florida. That being said, she walloped them and really left no doubt, so apparently has been training very well and is this a horse that has the speed, I think, to get involved from the inside. The only other horse I was really interested in using was Serengeti Empress, who sat a little bit off the pace and ended up winning going away. Now, one thing I'll say is that just be cautious with horses like this that maybe faced what could be vastly inferior foes. And we're talking about how we might be skeptical of what Nona Madeline faced at Monmouth or Congrats Gal at Laurel or Catherine the Great at Gulfstream. We're not really certain what the Indiana Downs fillies may have offered altogether. But this is clearly a horse that showed some quality at the sale last year. $70,000 for an alternation is a real price, and she certainly came out firing. So those are going to be my main three in the multi-race plays. But quite honestly, it's not going to be much of a surprise if it's anybody in this field.
I always, in these two races at the beginning of the meet, and somewhat in the middle of the meet too, with the 2-year-olds, I like when a horse has already run this 6-furlong distance. You have so many that come in at 5 and 5.5, and so a horse like Tapping Pearl, who won at 6, the figure is middling, but it's a little bit deceptive, and the fact that she's already negotiated 6 panels is significant. It's not a barrier for horses, of quality, but I do like that factor when looking at this and tomorrow in the Sanford on an annual basis. I reach for those types.
Yeah, I think we've had this conversation pretty much every opening day, and we're on the same page there. So an advantage to Tapping Pearl in that respect. She is one of those horses that you have to deal with in these types of races that wired first time out, that will not get the lead in this race, and we're just going to see if she's going to be fast enough to overcome that.
Exactly. And, you know, the other horse that I found myself compelled to use was that Lady Apple, who was a bit of a hard luck loss as you know, as the maiden in the Astoria, and maybe have still moved forward, you know, with some more time in the Asmussen barn. And so I'm going to use Lady Apple at a price.
I thought that race could have been redubbed the Isoria. It was a very, very difficult race to watch. I did not care for that race, and I don't. Eye in the Sky's performance belongs in a time capsule. I have no idea how she didn't win that race. It was quite the hang job. So we'll see. We'll see if they improve. I think in terms of the horses that are coming out of their maiden races, these Astoria also rans are a little bit behind the eight ball. But look, you're talking about second and third time starters, and the amount of improvement that we can see. I see it on a daily basis making figures. The amount of improvement from start one to two and two to three is really just much more fast than it is at any other time.
Very much. Excellent. All right, let's look at the Lake George, although I think it's a matter of short strokes, to be honest, Nick, between Daddy Is a Legend, Good Things Take Time, Altea and Punk, the two Chad Browns. It's some mix therein, it seems, and the question is the pace. I mean, Daddy, I think you noted when the draw came out that Daddy Is a Legend was up against it from the pace perspective again.
She is, and good God, this is the unluckiest horse in racing right now. I mean, between the just pitiful ride she got in the Appalachian after a horrible break to the aggressive move in the Edgewood, which I really don't want to fault Irad Ortiz at all for doing that. He was trying to win the race, and then last time to be totally pace compromised and still be running at the end of the Wonder again. She really deserves better, and I'm hopeful. George Weaver's a smart guy, and we've seen him do a lot of crafty things at Saratoga. I'm hoping that Manny Franco puts her on the lead. I know that might be... That's obviously very different from any way that she's run before, but there's no pace in here, and I don't think you want to get into a scenario where you're watching Good Things Take Time. I guess potentially Heavenly Love could show speed. It does seem like her speed has just completely evaporated, given that she showed some of it as a two-year-old. So I'm hopeful that they're aggressive. The other horse I would be interested in using primarily is Altea, but she's even more up against it in terms of the pace, given that she ran on well late in the Wonder again, now gets the blinkers, so maybe that'll sharpen her a little bit early. But I think that this is the kind of race where when you're looking at the Naira Betts pick five or the pick four, you're trying to get through this with the three and seven, and really, I think, focusing on Daddy Is a Legend, who I'm of the opinion that when push comes to shove, she's just going to prove to be better than these horses.
Very well could be. And I think, though, you know, knowing that we watch these grass races every year, not just here, Belmont, anywhere, really, you just...
Well, the voodoo song, wide open.
The voodoo song scenario from last week.
Exactly. Right. And of course, with the rail at zero and fresh grass down there, I think anybody who makes their way over to the hedge and can dole out modest fractions will obviously their chances are going to improve a ton. So if that's the trip that maybe. I don't know. Of the two fillies inside of Daddy Is a Legend, I really don't know who has enough speed to get involved. So I'm hopeful that Manny Franco just takes that potential advantage. I think that this race is going to be won by the horse whose jockey's moving their hands out of the gate, because whomever gets to the front in here is going to end up being very, very tough unless something totally crazy happens and we see like a real pace battle, and I think the chances of that are pretty remote.
Give us a couple of other spots on the card that you think are important linchpin type races. You've got that seventh that starts the late pick four, second leg of the Naira pick five, and I suppose we should think about those two-year-old fillies that are going to go five and a half, the first open company maiden special weight of the year in the fifth.
Yeah, the seventh is a super tough race, and I think this is one where you're going to end up having no choice but to go deep. I thought Sweet August Lady ran very well last time, rallying into a slow pace at 7/8. Now goes the mile in a 16th, which really shouldn't be a problem for her. She did break her maiden at a mile at Belmont last year and is drawn well on the inside. The main players in the race feel like they're drawn a little bit more towards the outside, especially if Hollywood Cat draws in off the also eligible list. And if you've been asleep for the last 2 months and haven't seen what Jason Service has been doing, this is the kind of horse that he has claimed and improved a ton in their next start. And quite honestly, this horse could win with her last race. So if there's any improvement whatsoever, she'll be virtually impossible to beat. I want to use Giant Zinger, who I thought moved aggressively into a strong pace last time at Belmont and was still able to stave off a rival on the outside in a photo that, if you haven't watched the replay, go back and watch it, and you're going to be shocked that Giant Zinger won the race. But she's a horse who should improve second off the layoff. Pause for the Cause is another who I think is a must-use. Ran a very credible race last time in the same race that Sweet August Lady exits and just might find herself on the lead here. year. We saw Dylan Davis do good things throughout this year so far, but even going back to last year at Saratoga, when he was aggressive and put horses on the lead, he certainly showed a great deal of ability. I think you have to use Cumbria, who, while maybe she doesn't have a huge excuse for last time, she was pretty wide going into the first turn, and that probably hurt her a little bit in the latter stages. That was a race that was won by a horse from a little bit off the pace, so I think you could see Cumbria improve with a slightly better trip. I just think you have no alternative in here but to be probably four or five deep, and I think the hope is that maybe you can find a way to narrow down that Lake George and get a little bit bold in the Schuylerville like I plan to do with Nona Madeline and a little bit of Catherine the Great and Serengeti Empress. The late pick five kicks off with a really, really interesting allowance race, and this is one of the horses who's going to be a price today that I have some interest in Bluegrass Jamboree, who broke from the rail last time, didn't get out of the gate with an issue, but was steadied around the half-mile pole, put in a little run, and then ultimately flattened out, really just didn't have a clear run whatsoever. This looks like kind of a Charlie Baker special. This is a horse that's run well twice at Saratoga. She's going to be a big price. She's in a very tough one other than, but this is the kind that you want to throw into a multi-race play, and you definitely want to fool around with in the exactas and the tries. I'll mainly use her with Miss Mimosa, Cipriana, and Elaney, all of whom I feel like have shown the ability to win this race and maybe come in off of efforts where they have a little bit of an excuse, specifically Elaney, who's tried to rally into slow paces in three straight starts, now goes third off the layoff, and for those of us that maybe haven't been paying as much attention to Midwest racing, look at the year that Eddie Canale is having. So he seems like he's got her positioned very, very well. One more I wanted to mention in the last is Dark Energy, breaking from the inside. Probably not going to get the price that we were hoping for, given that a pretty noted public handicapper that you and I are fond of is picking this horse. But this horse ran extremely well last time and had no chance, given the way the trip unfolded. Was very close to a hot pace that completely fell apart and then was totally stuck in a box at the quarter pole. And the race developed as he was idling. So he's one that has some speed. I'm hopeful that Kendra Carmouche is not terribly aggressive because there is some other confirmed speed in the race, and just using that inside post and hopefully the ability to sit there and wait for things to develop and then make that move. Now second off the layoff, I think he'll be a really interesting horse at a good price. And I'm going to use Shamsan in there, who's a new gelding for Doug Fout, moved from the barn of Kira McLaughlin. Maybe they're looking at the jumps with this horse long term, but I do think he deserves another chance or two on the flat, and he's the type that could juice up a horizontal at a really big price. A two-year-old race, the last one I'll touch on, the mixture here of first-time starters and really the best second-time starter to me is Wild Type, trained by the aforementioned Eddie Canale, 30% with over a $2 ROI with two-year-old second-time starters in maiden special weight dirt races. This is a horse who didn't get out of the gate that well, ran a good race in what was a bit of a merry-go-round. That looked like a race with some quality, and Adventurous Lady already came back and broke her maiden next time out. I'm going to use her. I'm going to use the obvious Todd Pletcher, Blahnik, who he's either going to run one of these two. They've been training together, so we'll see where he ends up going. You have to use Lyrical Lady coming in off some strong workouts for a barn that obviously can have one ready first time out. And, you know, playing the early pick five, I think you want to have as much coverage as possible because we can't see the board on this race when we place our bets.
Well, and I agree with Wild Type, and she is the interesting price, and it'll be tough to see her taking money when you've got, you know, the kinds of, you know, the obvious players in Pletcher and Asmussen on the front end. I mean, I think those two, whether it's Always Shopping, I prefer Always Shopping a little to
with the draw. Product.
Yeah, five and a half though.
I've been of the opinion these Todd Pletcher horses are trained outside of other horses so frequently that they really feel like they're in their comfort zone when they're out in the clear, especially early in their careers.
Well, it's an entertaining opening day, and there's plenty of opportunities and take shots and get everybody off to a big start. Let's turn to Saturday, Nick, and we'll do the same thing. Let's start with the stakes, and then we'll pick out a few places. And we got the counterpunch to the Schuylerville, the Sanford, long running. In fact, speaking of long running, it is the 100th running of the Schuylerville today. The Sanford. The boys take the stage, and we know already that Dreammaker is not participating, so it leaves us with a field of seven.
Yeah, it's a good group. Similar to the Schuylerville, you have a lot of horses that are coming in off wire-to-wire wins. They've certainly shown ability, and we'll see what happens when they all sort of crash together. This is... you know, this is a race that looks like Lexingtonian is supposed to win, given the way he ran in his debut and the fact that he showed some maturity in coming from off the pace. He just seems like the likeliest winner to me. I don't have anything particularly clever. I'm wondering who might be the speed of the speed among the horses that have shown a little bit of zip early in their careers. I will say that I'm not going to be beaten by Chase Greatness. I feel like I've seen Horacio De Paz win these kind of races or win races in general, and I've been beaten, so that's not somewhere I want to go. Bono Solo, of the Churchill Maiden Breakers, is probably the one I'm most interested in. This is clearly a horse that they knew was going to have some ability. They paid $400,000 for him at a two-year-old in training sale, and he came out first time out and won handily at 6-5. So you've got a horse that is now drawn outside. He might end up being the outside speed, which could be exactly the right place to find yourself in. And I think if somebody is able to do this either from on the pace or very, very close to it, it could be him, given that Lexingtonian feels like a horse that will come from a little bit farther off of it.
Now, and interestingly, a lot of the same themes from the Schuylerville present here, including Colebrook and Fletcher and Cassie and so forth. So, the two-year-old stake season gets underway. Let's talk about the older fillies and mares and the Diana, and got a horse like Proctor's Ledge that, you know, feels like the one that could block the Chad Brown assault on what, a third or fourth straight Diana.
She is the lone cloud that could rain on the Chad Brown parade. This would be Chad Brown's fourth Diana, his third in a row, and ironically, and it probably could be a trivia question that you'd find in a place like Clancy's, Diana was Chad Brown's first grade one back in 2011, Zagora. So clearly his barn has gotten much, much stronger since then, and this is a division where he's always very, very well represented. I mean, look, there's not much to say here. Sister Charlie is supposed to win this race if she gets any kind of pace help at all, and with Hawksmoor in there and New Money Honey in to probably prompt the pace a little bit, there should be enough of it. I don't really know if you could say she has an excuse for the New York. I think she was beaten by a very, very talented horse in her stablemate, Four-Star Crook, who got a better ride and was a little bit able to outmove her just a bit, but there's no doubt, and even still having lost since then, it doesn't matter to me that the best performance I've seen by an older female turf horse, really any female turf horse in years, was her Jenny Wiley. And I know she had a pretty favorable trip that day, but you don't see a horse explode down the stretch the way she did and put two lengths on a group of quality horses like that very often. So she's supposed to win. What are her biggest worries? A Raving Beauty getting potentially a more favorable set up, being a little bit closer and maybe being in that role that Four-Star Crook was, where she could outmove Sister Charlie. And I think the other concern, as you said, is Proctor's Ledge. And I don't think that Proctor's Ledge is a horse that lacks the ability to win this race. Clearly outside of Keeneland, she's a much, much better filly, and her Just a Game I thought was very, very good. A Raving Beauty was probably in a little bit better spot early, given where she was relative to the pace. So I'm going to look at what Proctor's Ledge did here twice last year. There's going to be no surprise if she ends up stepping up. So I think you're going to focus on Chad Brown probably winning with one of these two horses. And if it's not one of those two, it's Proctor's Ledge. I know there's going to be some love for Hawksmoor. She's been terrible in her last two starts. I know she stumbled at the start last time, but she never offered a run whatsoever, and her Dahlia was terrible. That was a very, very weak field. She found a way to lose after opening up, and quite honestly, I have respect for Arnaud Delacour as a trainer, but his horses need to start running when he brings them to New York. They've just drastically underperformed over the last couple of years, so I'm not going to be shocked if she, other than Hawksmoor, of course, I know I'm saying that, and she has two wins at Belmont, but thinking about the dirt horses especially, they've not really performed at that level. I know some people will also probably like Ultra Brat. That was about as a course-aided win as you're ever going to find last time, in my opinion, and I think at this level she's not really proven herself to be capable.
Grade 1 Diana, the first Grade 1 of the season, and then the fillies and mares on the, or the three-year-olds on the main track on Sunday. Talk about that in a second. Let's jump around a little. And the first boys race going long on the grass goes as the second tomorrow. And got some pedigrees. This is what's fun, looking around for families and ancestors or siblings. And a couple notables, including Mark Cassie sending out a second-time starter going from short on the dirt to long on the grass. Tracy Farmer, who seems to be kind of wading back into the game a little bit now these days. And LeGrand Balladura, the three-time stake-winning mare that produced this colt by Awesome Again, may have a little license to jump up and perform better going long on the grass. And there's also a second-timer, Graham Motion, sending out Alex Campbell's homebred, the Mucho Macho Man colt, My Macho. This is a brother to a personal favorite, Carlo Viveri.
Yeah, Carlo Viveri, Ashland winner, if I'm not mistaken, on the Poly track. So, yeah, Rusty Arnold.
Yep.
Rusty Arnold, filly. Most of the pedigrees here are really in the second family. There's really not a lot of first family pedigree, I will say, and we'll see if he keeps up with the numbers that he has. Mark Cassie seems like he has about 752-year-olds. He has a lot of horses. He's very well represented on opening weekend, and there's one good pedigree after another, so it's going to be real interesting to see how he gets his meet started. The horses that have run in here don't really, most of them have run on the dirt, so you don't have a great indication of what they're going to do going to the turf. I guess the favorite is going to be Digital Footprint, because why not make Chad Brown favored in these races? This is it's a relatively modest pedigree. It's a mostly second family pedigree. There's really nothing to speak of. The Dam was 1-for-4. She's dropped one horse, and that one did not win and did not run on the turf. So you're not really dealing with terribly much. But at the same time, it's one of those races where everybody's so scattered, and usually Chad Brown's horses are prepared first time out, especially to go long on the turf. So I think you find your way there. I thought that Noble Spirit had a relatively interesting pedigree, being that he was by Noble Mission and has a very long-winded on the Dam side. So there's, I think, a little bit of interest there. So, I mean, I didn't have anything particularly clever to say. I thought that you probably needed to use C-Now also, despite being drawn poorly. I think having a race under his belt will help his cause, and I'm going to use My Macho. Again, Graham Motion is a trainer who's done well in these races in the past. This is a Dam who produced three turf winners, including Carlo Viveri, and there are three turf winners on the Dam side of High Sheriff as well, and you don't have to dig back that far to think about Dwayne Lucas doing well in these kind of races too. So don't be shocked if High Sheriff wins this race at 15-1 or so, and we all say, oh great, you know, we knew that Wayne could have one ready in these and got by us on opening weekend.
Well, let's move maybe to the sixth, which is going to be notable for a couple of reasons. It's the boys' opportunity to go short and on the dirt, but the hubbub, the excitement over the bald-faced Southern Phantom is, and rightly so, the unique marking on his face and his eyes, it's got people agog.
Right, and he has the perfect trainer who will promote his horse very, very well. So it's they're made for each other. It's very interesting. Yeah, and you know, all reports are that the horse is working well. The pedigree is pretty fair. There's a couple of winners on the Dam side, and so it's not going to be altogether shocking if this horse can run a little bit. And he seems to have landed in a decent spot. If Coast gets in off the also eligible list, I think the race becomes significantly tougher. Obviously, Nitrous, given his debut performance, is going to be a pretty strong favorite, and deservedly so. He rallied into a slow pace that day and really finished with interest. Feels like a horse also who's going to really benefit from a little bit more ground. So I would assume that you could make Binary, Nitrous, Southern Phantom, Coast, if he gets in, those are all the horses you want to use. I think if you want to be bullish, you'll probably lean a little bit more on Nitrous. I'll say this much, the pedigree on Jeremiah Englehart's Put the Glass Down is very, very good. And this was a 12-time winning Dam. Violence has been a very strong first out sire. The concern, obviously, is the rail. So this might be a horse that ends up needing a race, but that's not a horse that I want to be beaten by at 15 or 20-1. The good thing about this race is that it's not in the early pick five and just starts the pick six, so we'll be able to see what the board shows. But you can kind of imagine that if Coast doesn't get in, then we'll see Nitrous favored, and Binary and Southern Phantom, I'm sure, will take some money, and we'll kind of be able to sort it out from there.
Well, and you mentioned Put the Glass Down, and this is a sibling of Fixed Income Larry that going back to Belmont weekend, the late runner for Al Gold that got up, found himself in a little bit of a deeper water in the Dwyer, but those that saw Fixed Income Larry, this is the brother. It's an interesting group. A couple of other spots, Nick, that we got a turf sprint to deal with in the eighth. That starts the late pick four, and I suppose that nightcap, that 50,000 claimer going a mile with a bulky field and some drop downs, that might be an important race as the anchor leg on the multis.
Oof, I mean, good luck in that one. That is a Saratoga race if you've ever seen it. There's a lot of contenders. I think that team colors will be favored. He had a very favorable trip last time winning at this level, and I think the likelihood of him duplicating at least that type of trip from the outside post is very, very low. You have Hieroglyphics dropping in class. Superfast probably ran almost as well as team colors last time. Superfast, of course, the brother of Uncle Mo. Expected ruler stretching out. I'm not really terribly fond of it a longer distance. Monster B is now in a position where he's facing weaker competition than he has before. He's had the misfortune of running into the juggernaut that became Slim Shady. I think what you want to be certainly cognizant of is that this is a mile, and goofier things happen at a mile on the inner turf than any other distance at Saratoga. I think you want to take the pace into consideration, so I wouldn't be hasty to exclude horses like Thatcher Street or Tweet Kitten, who, even though they might be coming out of, not so much for Tweet Kitten, but they might be coming out of weaker races, they're horses that are going to get good trips drawn inside and forwardly placed. So I'm going to be very deep in this race. I don't even have it narrowed down to where I would exactly go. I do know that I'm going to try and get through that Diana and Sanford as skinny as possible to have as many as I can use there. And for that matter, the eighth race is no bargain either, given that it feels like we've got a pretty big number in there that could win. You've got a horse like Really Proud, who I thought ran well last time, now comes back off a bit of a break. First Appeal got going at Saratoga last year, had a couple of wins. And La Naturelle has stayed pretty good, all things considered, off the claim. Now it steps into deeper water. So that's another race that feels like you're going to be probably reaching as far as you can. You want to make a decision pace-wise as well. And I think you want to open yourself up to the possibilities of horses like Battle Joint, who's drawn outside and probably doesn't need to be on the lead, can stalk and pounce at what should be a good price. So, no, it's a really good sequence. It's a good, though people may be scoffing at the field size, I do think there's a lot of very contentious races, and that'll spice things up for sure.
I want to ask you one, before we talk about the Oaks, I want to ask you one question. Looking at the fourth, which is a mile and three-eighths, or a mile and three-sixteenths, and these can be confounding, Nick, not just at Saratoga, but anywhere. How do you typically approach a race like this when you're going to have to look at some horses? We even have a slightly similar situation with the opener today, a mile and an eighth, with horses other than Turco Bravo that are real question marks at a mile and an eighth on the main track. And I think this is one of the more difficult equations that players face, is when these extended routes show up in sequences, and you got to make some pace decisions, and you got to make some assumptions about who's going to succeed and be able to finish in a race like this.
Yeah, I mean, for good or for ill, I've always been of the opinion that the mile and 3/16 with the long run to the first turn, the pace is usually pretty solid. Now, that's a mistake, of course, I've made in the past, given that the pace is seldom solid. But you usually have, with a better than quarter mile run to the first turn, there's usually a pretty decent early gallop. And this feels like a race where Windjammer will show some speed. Bo Bell is capable of having a little bit of speed on the outside. I would imagine Shamrock Babe won't be terribly far back. So it feels like it should be an honestly run race. I was intrigued by War Cabinet, who I thought had very little go her way at Keeneland, and I think on a day where really the entire meet, you didn't want to have to make up a great amount of ground on the turf, and this is a horse who broke poorly in her first start for Deshug McGahee. So, I generally don't approach them any differently. I will, if you have a horse that's coming off a mile and a quarter at Belmont,
or a race like that, I think you'll give them an advantage when it looks like there could be some distance challenged horses. But for the most part, these races are won by the same group of three or four trainers who really condition their horses for long distance turf racing. And when I say that, I mean, you know, guys like Christophe Clement, obviously Chad Brown, maybe to a slightly lesser extent Bill Mott, but Shug McGahey, I think, is one that you would definitely include in that. I think you'd include Jimmy Toner, who has plans to prosper, who'll end up going off favored, and she's kind of a funny horse in that two back at Monmouth, she was moving too late, and last time she probably moved too early. But all things considered, I didn't think she had a pretty big excuse last time, and maybe the blinker sharpened her up a little bit, so I guess I understand making her the favorite, but she's not a horse I'm going to knock anybody out of the way to get to the window to bet.
Finally, Nick, I appreciate that. Finally now, the Oaks on Sunday, and may have to deal with a wet track, but all things being equal, Monomoy Girl, Midnight Bizou, and then a graded stake winner and two grade one placed fillies, as much of a throwback group of five as you'll see in this era.
It really is. It's kind of an old-fashioned bunch. The good thing is that the race is not until Sunday, so Saul Kumin has a chance to buy into the other three horses in the field. It's impossible to look at this race without acknowledging that Monomoy Girl has a colossal pace advantage on these horses. And I don't know if you can't psych yourself out too far ahead about a race that could be run on a wet track. And it is worth noting that Midnight Bizou did show significantly more speed last time than she did certainly in the Kentucky Oaks. And that's probably something that Steve Asmussen has been trying to do. But if Monomoy Girl gets into a scenario where she can dictate terms to her rivals, then she's supposed to be very, very tough to beat. I know that Midnight Bizou really wowed everybody last time, but this is a situation where, and I'm sure there's a certain well-noted figure maker in Washington, D.C. that's gonna laugh if we see Monomoy Girl beat Midnight Bizou pretty comfortably again, because as good as Midnight Bizou ran last time, the Mother Goose was really not that explosive performance figure-wise that some may have thought it would be visually, and I still think that Monomoy Girl is pretty clearly a better horse. I also think this is a scenario where she's going to get a more favorable trip. Now, one thing I'll say is if this track comes up wet, she's probably not good enough to beat either of them, but Eskimo Kisses is a horse who ran her best race by far on a sloppy surface. And even though she's another one who's somewhat pace-dependent, you could probably see her potentially split the big two in the exacta, because I don't see Chocolate Martini or Geo Game really being good enough to do that. So that might be the only thing from a betting perspective. I just get the opinion. I'm of the opinion that this race is really going to be for fans.
Well, looking forward to it. Looking forward to the entire season. And Nick, best of luck. I appreciate it as always. Everybody loves hearing your opinions, and a trip to Del Mar in the offing. So we'll talk to you next Thursday. And of course, it'll be Haskell weekend as well. That draw is Thursday. So we'll focus on Saratoga with Nick, and we'll talk next week.
Sounds great, Steve. Good luck. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. Nick Tamaro, everybody, and you're ready for the opening Friday and Saturday of Saratoga. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Steve Anderson is going to join us, and we'll have a visit, of course, with Sean Clancy, as promised, and Ed and Scully as well, Hammer and Mike Welch ahead on the weekend preview of opening weekend at Del Mar in Saratoga, opening day, of course, today here in Upstate New York. I have to say it, the foothills of the Adirondacks. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee.
Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.